Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 2 for June 13th, 2015. Hey! FatBike.com presents Fat Camp, a monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/fatcamp, one word, or subscribe to our feed on iTunes. Welcome, campers. This whole show is going to be about hub standards.
Hub standards. Woo! All right.
Yeah, exciting stuff.
Ooh, fired up.
Well, it is kind of a topic that's got a lot of people fired up because there's some new standards out there. You probably heard the name Boost a lot.
Oh,
and if you read around on the interwebs at all, it seems like everybody's got an opinion and a lot of them aren't real positive about it.
Opinions are like some other body part.
Yes, yes. I think everybody's got one.
Yep.
So what our goal of this podcast is to explain why you might want to consider Boost or some of the other standards that are out there and kind of try to separate the wheat from the chaff, you know, explain what the benefits are of different aspects and try to end up bringing this down to a level that most people can get and kind of get a big picture out of it all, because people tend to obsess on one or two aspects of it and not really think of the big picture.
So Ken and I are going to try to bust this up into four different sections as best we can. Section one, what we're going to into is just define some terms, explain what these words mean, talk about our new standards with my fingers there.
Yes, we ended up having a little rabbit, you know, inverted comma. Yeah,
exactly. So that first section, you know, after the break, we're going to kind of do some vocabulary for you. Our second section is going to get into chain line. And then some information on 1x drivetrains, 2x drivetrains, and 3x drivetrains. So we're going to talk a lot about chain line. Third section, we're going to get into, what does widening the hub do to the wheel? Why do you want a wider hub? What will it do to the whole wheel? There's probably going to be a lot of geekitude in that one. That's in that third section. Widening your hub, what does it do? And then our final section, we're going to get into tire and drivetrain clearance. How do you make sure that that tire and that drivetrain play friendly together?
Yes, and make sure you got all the options you want.
Exactly. So that's our agenda for today, and we hope you enjoy hanging out talking about hubs.
Yep, welcome to the campfire, campers. Welcome back, campers. For years, mountain bikes have had 135 spacing. I think this has been going on since the very, 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 very early days of mountain biking. And in recent years, you've started hearing a lot more talk about 142 spacing.
135, what's the unit on that?
Okay, those are millimeters.
Millimeters, okay, good.
Yep, that's 135 is the distance between the inside faces of the rear dropout.
Gotcha.
Now, 142 and 135, basically the same blooming thing. The only difference is that 142 is a through axle design. And, you know, over the years, that quick release and like those little nubs that stick out of your hub make it really nice to stick your wheel in a frame, because it just sort of slots into that dropout and it sits there until you clamp down that quick release and secure everything to go ride.
Yeah.
So 142 is basically the same exact thing, but when you have a through axle, you don't have little nubs on the outside of the axle of the wheel to hold the wheel in place when you first put it in there and before you end up just carrying the quick release or whatever you're using to, you know, tighten the wheel on the frame. So what frame designers have done is add on this like little shelf or this pocket that's 3.5 millimeters wide on either side of the frame that this wider axle, the 7 millimeter wider axle, kind of slots into. And it just makes it so that you can slip your wheel in there really nice and easily. It'll line up where your through axle can end up just sliding through nicely. And it kind of gives you that convenience factor that you had with a quick release wheel, but with the added stiffness and security of a through axle.
3.5 plus 3.5, 7 millimeters. So this explains why the 135 and the 142 are the exact
Exactly.
Same, just a different type of attachment, wheel attachment.
That's exactly
okay,
it.
Okay, got that.
Yep. So now we got that out of the way. You'll end up hearing us a lot of times talk about other standards kind of interchangeably, and almost all of them ended up having this 7 millimeter increase to go from a quick release setup to through axle. So, you know, same thing happens in like fat bike world when you go from a 170 rear end to a 177.
Okay,
moving on. Next thing here, you're going to end up hearing us talk a little bit about Q factor. And you can kind of think of Q factor as how wide your feet need to end up being apart.
Why do they call it a Q factor, though?
I'll be honest, I don't know what the historical reference is there. It's probably some...
If someone out there knows, let it, you know...
Yeah, right in.
Right in. Let us know what this where the Q from Q factor came from.
But basically, to try to explain it, is like if you ended up mounting your non-drive train crank arm in the opposite orientation, so totally in a way that you wouldn't be able to ride the bike. So like what would happen is, you know, if you ended up having the drive side crank arm facing straight down and you mounted the non-drive crank arm, so it was also pointed straight down, so they're both kind of pointing in the same direction.
That's messed up.
Yep, it's really messed up. But if you did that, so you could end up measuring your Q factor, the Q factor would end up being the distance between the outer faces of the crank arm where the pedal attaches. So it's essentially, it's like kind of a stance thing. It's how wide your pedals need to end up being on your bike. And the reason why Q factor is important is because there are some riders that if their feet get too far apart, they start to run into knee issues. There's other riders, and I got to kind of end up voicing the flip side of this, like myself, where if my Q factor gets too narrow, then I start to run into knee problems. So it has definite biomechanical implications. You know, depending on the rider, Q factor might be something that you're really, you know, like – into, or it might just be, you know, no big deal. This bike feels funny because my feet are wider apart.
It doesn't seem to have bothered me at all. But I mean, going from the traditional bottom bracket 73, and I think mine's sitting at 100 now.
Yeah. And you're bringing up the fat bike thing. Most mountain bikes have a 73 millimeter bottom bracket.
Okay.
And that's the how wide your frame is for where the bearings screw into the frame or press into the frame. And most fat bikes have 100 millimeter
right
wide bottom bracket shell. So it's approximately an inch wider. And if you're the type of rider who can ride a regular mountain bike or ride your fat bike, and you might be like, oh, that feels a little different when you first hop on, but you don't have any knee issues or anything else like that.
The Q factor is not a factor then.
Yeah. The Q factor doesn't make a difference to you.
Okay.
Q factor is one of those things that has gotten a ton of press and a lot of people talk about, but I haven't run into that many riders where it's a significant difference. Typically, it's with smaller statured riders, the Q factor makes more of a difference. And then, you know, and this doesn't really get talked about, but then bigger riders like myself, I'm 6'4". Q factor can end up being an issue, but you want it wider.
Okay.
So it goes both ways.
But that's what it is.
Yep. Okay. It's the distance, like basically it's your stance. It's how wide your cranks are.
Okay. Next word.
All right. Boost.
No.
Yeah, this is a word that you're hearing a lot in the cycling media. It's a concept that SRAM came up with. They partnered with Trek on this to kind of launch it. And I think officially it only refers to the rear hub spacing. And what they did was they increased that hub spacing. These are pretty much all through axles. So it's now 148 compared to what has been around for a while, which is the 142 that we had started talking about.
So hang on, calculator here. 6 millimeter difference.
Yes, it's 6 millimeters wider.
Okay.
You also will end up hearing the term boost referring to the front hub spacing.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that falls under the umbrella, but it's the same exact concept. What's happened is on the front, your normal 9 millimeter quick release front end, and then, you know, your 15 mil through axle stuff, all of that has only been 100 mil wide. And what people have found is that that kind of ends up affecting some wheel stiffness things and a lot of these other issues. So now what they're doing is they're boosting that. They're increasing that by 10 millimeters. And a lot of the fork manufacturers and everybody are going with 110 front spacing.
They're boosting in the front for a different reason than they're boosting in the back, though.
Yes and no.
Okay.
There's some additional reasons in the back, which we're going to get into, but it all comes back down to sort of wheel strength and wheel stiffness.
Gotcha. Okay.
But we'll talk more about that.
All right.
A couple of important things just to kind of get out of the way since we're talking about Q factor. The boost standard does not affect the Q factor of cranks. And there's really three big reasons, and we're gonna spell these out a lot more and kind of give some nuance to this. But there's three reasons why you might want to end up considering a boost setup.
Reason number one.
So you start off with you can run fatter tires and or have increased drivetrain options. We'll get into all the numbers on this and explain it better. But when you start getting like a 3-inch tire, like a plus size tire, you have the basically issues fitting everything in there up front by the chain rings. And you can end up having the chain rub on the tire if you try to end up running, let's say, a 2x crank on a 3-inch tire bike that's got a regular old 135, 142 rear end. So it fixes that. This is kind of a rerun of the 170 to 190 switch that we saw in the fat bike world that a lot of you might be familiar with if you're a big fat bike rider. A couple years ago, we ended up seeing most bikes switch from being spaced at 170 in the rear end to 190 in the rear end when we ended up seeing the increase of 5-inch tire options. That 5-inch tire would rub on the chain if you only had a 170 rear end. So this whole thing with increased tire clearance when you got fatter tires, same exact thing the fat bike world has lived through.
Reason number two.
Stronger wheel. We'll talk more about this, but you end up getting a significantly stronger wheel when you go from the 142 up to the 148 spacing.
Reason number three.
This is kind of a theoretical thing, and it's really up to the frame builder, but you can end up making it so you can have shorter chain stays on a wider hubbed rear wheel.
I think later on we're probably going to talk about...
We'll get into a lot more.
Why those chain stays, when they're short, are a lot of fun.
Yep, exactly. And that's a big trend right now in the industry is to shorten up the chain stays, which I'm a big supporter of. So this just allows you to be able to end up doing some more stuff with that.
Okay, so far we've defined the 135, 142. We've gotten into the Q factor, talked about that briefly. Real briefly talked about boost. And I think there's a couple more things we just want to define, talk about before we get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, we kind of got to talk about, I don't know if you want to call this the redheaded stepchild or what, but there's an existing standard out there that pretty much always comes up whenever anybody starts talking about boost. And I'll be honest, I'm a big fan of this. And that is 150/157 millimeter rear spacing. This has been in the downhill world for a really long time. Because, as we're going to talk about a little bit later, a wider hub makes for a stronger wheel. And since downhill guys are beating the crap out of their stuff and riding really hard, having a wider wheel was a big advantage to them.
Are you going to talk about why a wider hub makes a stronger wheel?
Yes. That's okay. Something we're going to get into in a big way. All because right. that's a really important piece to why you might want to consider some of these wider hub
standards.
I'd
like to have that explained to me. I'm kind of clueless on that part.
Yeah, so you can kind of think of the 150-157 standard as being boostier, not to be confused with bustier.
Yes.
But it's boostier. It basically increases all of those potential upsides to the boost. But unfortunately, it's not, you know, the magic rainbow unicorn that's perfection in the mountain bike world. There's some potential negatives that might come up with that. So, you know, if you're thinking about a new bike, it's important to end up kind of weighing your options in there and really knowing what are the absolute sort of benefits and what are the negatives on that one.
Okay.
We'll get into this a little bit more, but there's some other frame modifications that you might potentially want to do, like an 83 millimeter bottom bracket shell, or you might end up limiting some of your drivetrain options. Those are kind of the big bullet points on things that you really, you know, because this is so much wider than the 135-142 standard, you really got to end up weighing some of your options on that.
It sounds like it's pretty darn close to being 148, but I'm, you know, this is kind of confusing to me that Boost comes out with 148, but there's 150 that's always been there. So, I'm getting tired of this stuff. I'm kind of getting exhausted here trying to understand this. So we're going to slow it down, maybe.
Okay. So, in speaking of which, fatigue. Like we kind of kicked off, there's a lot of vitriol out there on the interwebs about new standards in the bike industry. Those jerks, they're always trying to make us buy new stuff and planned obsolescence, and what I'm riding is just fine, and all this other stuff. So we kind of see three camps forming on this whole Boost and new hub standard stuff. And one camp is, you know, I've been riding 135, 142 for years. It's worked great. There's no problems with it. This Boost stuff is just a bunch of marketing mumbo jumbo. They're trying to make me spend money and buy stuff from them.
Yeah, I hear that a lot and read that a lot. Just curmudgeons.
I think there's definitely some curmudgeonly aspects to it. Yeah. There's no doubt about it, but it's frustrating. I mean, my own personal experience, and I don't want to go off in too much of a tangent, but my own personal experience is that, you know, you guys might have seen my, my Quiring, Judas Goat, in fatbike.com. And that's a 4-season fat bike. It's an amazing bike, but I got that when I already had a really nice kick butt, titanium Quiring 29er that I absolutely loved and still love. The problem is that the Judas Goat is so much better all the time that I never ride my older bike. So I started looking at it and be like, okay, I'd like to put in some fatter tires on it. I'd like to end up, you know, putting on some plus tires, at least putting a plus tire on the front and running a little bit fatter tire on the rear. Or I'd like to do this, or I'd like to do that. And I start running into these issues where I've got an older fork. It's only spaced at 100 millimeters. So, okay, if I'm going to go with a new fork, do I go with the 110 standard? The rear end on that is only, 135 right now. So I'm kind of limited on that.
You can't just spread your rear end out.
Nope. Yeah, you definitely don't want to do that. I'm battling with this myself because I've got this really great bike that I love, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to get it up to modern standards.
Okay.
And that's just because things are evolving. We'll get into more reasons why. So that was a long discussion of camp number one. Camp number two of people out there, how they view this Boost world is, Boost is just more incremental progress and does offer some real benefits. And I think that's probably the most rational way of looking at this. And we'll kind of explain why Boost is coming up now, why it wasn't around a couple of years ago, and kind of give some historical perspective on that.
I anticipate campers number one moving into campers number two eventually.
I think over time, a lot of people are going to end up doing that. But the thing is, and I guess, this is a really important time to end up interjecting and saying that if your bike kicked butt, a year ago before all this Boost stuff came out, or 5 years ago, it kicked butt.
Yeah.
It's still going to be a kick butt bike.
Oh, yeah.
It's not to say that all of a sudden your bike is worthless. That's totally not true. A good bike is pretty much always going to end up being a good bike. However, some of this new stuff does give you some additional options and allows you to do some cool stuff. So, being able to do cool stuff with your bike is always good. So, people that are hating on these new standards and some of the things that are coming out, I think it's a little bit short-sighted. And I think, people are going to start to see the benefits down over the long run. And kind of, like you said, moving to camp two.
Yeah, right. Well, and, when we invite everybody to our 26-inch kiddie wheel party with our V-brakes.
Yes, the vintage mountain bike group ride.
That's going to be awesome. So, and that'll be fun. We'll love it. It'll be great.
Yeah, I love doing rides like that because it makes you appreciate all the goodness that's going on right now with modern bikes.
Yeah.
Okay, so
one more camp.
Yeah, third camp here. There's a lot of people that you'll end up seeing anytime Boost comes up is be like, Yeah, okay, Boost offers some benefits over, you know, like a 142 spaced bike, but it's dumb to create a new standard. There's already a really good standard out there. There's this 150, 157. It's been around for years. You know, why make a new standard when we don't need to end up doing that?
I know some campers in that camp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, there's definitely some logic to that, but what we're going to try to end up doing is explaining what the pros and the cons are to the 150, 157. And it's going to be right for some people. It's not going to be right for everybody.
Okay.
I'll sort of put myself in the camp of, if I were going to have a new bike built that was a dedicated plus bike, I would definitely go 157. And I'll explain why to later on. So, you know,
rather than Boost.
Correct. I would not go Boost. I would go 157. And that has to do with my riding style, my size, and where I live. Okay. But we'll add some subtlety to that and explain why that's an important piece.
Sounds good.
Okay. Whew. That's a lot of stuff to define and kind of lay out there. So we're going to get into some nuance with this and break it down. So coming up next, we're going to start talking about chain line and how this wider hub standard doesn't just affect the rear end, but it also affects your cranks and what's going on up there. So take a little break, take a sip. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back, campers, to section number two, where we start talking about the exciting topic of chain line.
Chain line basics. I got to make a s'more for this one.
Yeah, this gets a little bit number heavy, but we'll try to break it down so people can understand what the heck we're talking
about.
Sounds good.
Okay,
so we got to start off with two numbers on this one. First thing, well, actually, let me explain the concept of what chain line is. Chain line is this theoretical center line of your cogs in the rear. And it's how far off of the center line of the bike that is. And to kind of explain it a little bit, why this affects chain rings and stuff, is that you want your chain rings to be centered on your cassette in the rear, or with your gears in the rear. And the reason why you want that is, excuse me, you don't want your chain have to angle way far over, more so than it has to cover the range of gears in the
rear.
For
a long period of time.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, classically people talk about, like, with a double or triple chain, you know, ring setup, you don't want a cross gear. You don't want to run big or small. And it's because of these extreme angles. It wears out your drivetrain. Things don't shift real well. It's a lot noisier. There's more friction. There's all these negatives that go with that. And all of that same rationale applies to chain line.
I want my chain to go straight when I'm in the middle of the gears in the back.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. So the reason why this is important is because as we space out that rear wheel, as the rear hub gets wider, that pushes the cassette to the outside also. So when you look at, let's say, a 142 regular old mountain bike, and you compare it to a Boost bike, you know, which is a 6 millimeter wider rear hub spacing, that means that each side of that hub went out by 3 millimeters. Okay. So your cassette is 3 millimeters further out on a Boost bike than it is on a regular 142 spaced mountain bike. And that means that correspondingly, if you want to keep your chain line, you want to keep all your shifting working properly and all this other kind of stuff, you need to end up moving the chain rings out by 3 millimeters also.
The front chain rings need to go out as well.
Exactly. Okay. So when you start talking about different hub widths, you can't, you know, separate that from also talking about what's going on up at the chain rings.
Okay.
So to give a little context, chain rings are normally 7.5 to 8 millimeters apart. So if you end up going from, let's say, you know, you got a 2-ring setup up front, you go from the little ring to the big ring and you measure how far apart those are, that's 7.5 to 8 millimeters.
Ish.
Yep. And it varies by manufacturer and how many speeds we're talking.
Damn,
and
close
stuff
enough.
Like
okay.
That. Yeah. 7.5 to 8 millimeters. So if you look at Boost at 3 millimeters, that you know, your cassette moved out by 3 millimeters, it moved your chain line further outboard by 3 millimeters. Mm-hmm. That's almost exactly half of a chain ring distance.
Yeah.
So I tend to not like to think in terms of millimeters up front, I like to tend to think of where chain rings are placed when talking about going from 142 to boost or up to this 150, 157 standard. So in talking about that, your boost standard, your chain rings have to move out by half a position in order for your chain line still to be good.
How do you move them out half a position?
We'll get to that here in just a second.
Okay.
With the 150, 157, since that ends up being 15 millimeters wider than your normal 142 setup,
mm-hmm.
that means each side of your hub moved outboard by 7.5 millimeters. Dong!
I've heard the seven and... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly the same width as your chain rings.
Okay.
So to go from a 142 to a 157 setup, you would need to end up moving all your chain rings out one full position in order for them to line up properly again.
Okay, I got that.
So I think that's a lot easier way to think of it.
It makes sense.
All this millimeter stuff.
Right.
Now, to kind of break this down, and hopefully this doesn't make it more confusing, but if you think about your crank options and you think about boost or you know, this 157 stuff. I'm going to keep talking about 157 here. So if you think about, you know, your normal crank setup on a mountain bike, let's talk about a triple.
Okay.
That on a normal triple with a 135, 142 rear end, that middle ring should line up smack dab in the middle of your cassette. And your big ring position on that triple would end up being 7.5 to 8 millimeters further out.
Oh, okay.
So if you're talking a 157 rear spaced bike, like we said before, that cassette is moved out one chain ring position or, you know, 7.5 millimeters. So you can end up running just a plain old triple crank, just, you know, with a normal, you know, 104 bolt circle. That's mm-hmm. the diameter of where the holes are for mounting your chain ring. And if you run a chain ring in that big ring position, you would end up having a 1x setup that lines up perfectly chain line wise on a 157 bike.
Oh, okay.
So this is one of the big advantages to the 157. If you're just a 1x rider, you only run one chain ring, that's totally fine. There's a million cranks that are out there that are available. You just run the chain ring in the big ring position of a triple crank set, and you're good to go. So, you know, you can end up running SRAM, Shimano, Race Face, or a million other crank manufacturers, and you don't need anything special.
Hmm.
So that's a real important piece. Now, the issue with 157 is that there's not a lot of options for running anything other than a 1x setup right now, unless you end up going with wider cranks. And I think that's an important thing also to mention here. We're just talking about chain ring position. We're not talking about widening the crank set at all. So if you're willing to end up going with a 1x setup with a 157 rear end, and you're running that chain ring in the big ring position, your stance, your Q factor, you know, the width between your feet is mm-hmm. exactly the same as a normal mountain bike. There's no difference whatsoever at all. So it's not going to affect any of the biomechanics of you riding your bike.
You're not going to walk off your bike being all bow-legged.
Nope, not at all.
You mentioned that you'd run a 157 over one.
Well, I'll get to that here in 1 second.
Oh.
Because we got to talk about sort of what the advantages of the boost setup is versus 142 or 157.
Okay.
And with the boost setup, if you remember, that to work effectively and have a good chain line, you got to move all of your chain ring positions out half a position. So they're starting to make, you know, special spiders to mount the chain rings on and things like that that do that.
Oh, okay.
So you can easily get a 2x setup for a boost rear-ended bike and have your chain line be perfect. There's no problems at all on that. Another way you can end up doing this, if you've got like a regular old triple crank set, you can end up running chain rings in the middle and big position, and that'll space it exactly like the special boost crank arm spider things that are they're talking about moving it out by, you know, 3.5 millimeters or whatever it is. So there's some really good options that way. As far as I know, I don't think there's really too many options for triple chain rings and a boost setup right now.
Are people still running triples?
I know it's big in Europe.
Oh, really?
There's still a lot of people who are doing that. And obviously, like in a touring scenario where you need to have a really wide range because you just, I mean, you're out there for a big adventure. You don't know what you're going to get.
Right.
A triple still has its place. But in general, most people are sticking with a 2x setup or going with a 1x setup. And that's especially true now that manufacturers are starting to get on board and offer more options for the range of cassettes in the rear.
Yeah.
You know, that's been a godsend to be able to end up seeing some of these options where you can, you know, you can go with, you know, 1042 if you're talking SRAM or 1140 or 1142 with Shimano. And then there's all these different conversion things where you can throw a 42 or a 44 tooth cassette on the back. So that's really made it so that most people don't feel the need for a triple anymore.
I guess the only time I see a triple now is like with my brother-in-law's rock hopper that he got for his wedding back in the early 90s, and he hits the local trail 3 times a year. He goes mountain biking.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of an old school thing at this point.
Right.
It still has its place, but it really is kind of getting phased out just because it's just not practical for most people.
I hate front derailleurs.
Yeah, and you know, living in the Midwest, we can hate front derailleurs all we want. If I lived out in the Rockies, I would love front derailleurs because it would give me, you know, that range I need for, you know, bombing downhill at super high speed or, you know, just grinding uphill at, you know, above 10,000 feet.
Right. So as soon as we rip on having a triple, then, you know,
yeah, I mean,
where you live, they may be like giving us the finger saying, no, come and ride this without a triple and see how you do.
That's exactly it. Okay. Yeah. You know, different strokes for different folks. You know, it really depends on what your trails are like that you want to end up doing.
All right. Back on track.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for pulling us back in. So I guess kind of to sum up some of this stuff, if you're talking boost, you're going to end up having a lot of different chainring options. You're going to end up having really good 1x setups. You're going to end up having really good 2x setups.
Okay.
And all of those things are more or less just positioned, you know, 3.5 millimeters further outboard than your regular crank set. If you get into the realm of 150, 157, where you've got to end up moving that whole chainring situation out a full chainring position, your options start to become a little bit more limited. There is sort of an out on this, and depending on what your feelings are on Q factor, this might be a consideration or not. But with the downhill world, like we mentioned at the beginning, downhillers have had this 150, 157 around for a long time. And what they did before there was all these chainring options and everything, they ended up going from a 73 millimeter bottom bracket shell up to an 83 millimeter bottom bracket shell.
That's not that much.
No, it's only 1 centimeter. So, you know, you compare that to fat bikes, which have a 100 millimeter bottom bracket shell.
Uh-huh.
So it's a slight increase. And then it gives you all the, you know, the crank set options. You know, let me back up and then rephrase it. Gives you all the chainring options. The thing is, though, the crank sets are very limited. There's not a lot of 83 millimeter bottom bracket crank sets out there. And the reason for that is because in the downhill world, most downhillers run really short cranks, like 165 millimeter arms.
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that gives them extra clearance. It allows them to spin faster. There's a lot of advantages in that world. But that doesn't work for most of us that are doing more, you know, all-mountain, cross-country type stuff where we want to have, you know, what's pretty normal is 175 millimeter or longer crank arms. So luckily, Raceface recently ended up introducing an 83 millimeter bottom bracket spindle that works with their excellent cinch system. Mm-hmm. So they offer a couple different cranks at sort of different performance and, you know, weight, you know, levels. Next SL is at the top. A lot of people end up, that's kind of a flagship crank for a lot of people because it's so light and flexible. And what you can end up doing is you can slap in an 83 millimeter bottom bracket spindle, and you can end up using any one of their cranks. So you would end up having triple, double, or
But your bottom bracket shell doesn't have to be 83.
Yes. That's the thing. You got to have a frame that is built with an 83 millimeter Bonner bracket shell.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that's a big investment.
Yeah.
And there's some companies like Chumba that are, you know, really kind of into the plus thing where they're going with the 150, 157 rear spacing. They're going with 83 millimeter bottom bracket shell.
Okay.
You know, they have a big history with downhilling, and it was just a natural for them. And it might make sense for other riders, but you're typically not going to see that in a big production bike run. You're only going to end up seeing it in a more custom or more niche manufacturer situation.
You can't run a 3x drivetrain on that setup, though. On the 157.
I believe you would be able to end up doing that.
Oh,
yeah,
you could.
Yeah, because Raceface makes some triple chain ring spider options for their cinch cranks.
Huh. Okay.
So you do have some flexibility there.
All right.
Now, you ended up asking me a little bit ago about why I would choose to run a 157 rear space bike instead of Boost. And this is a good time to end up talking about that because I live in the Midwest. I'm a strong rider. I really don't need any more range than what's offered by a 1x setup. So with this 157 stuff, I know we just babbled on about 83 millimeter bottom bracket shells and all this other kind of
blah,
stuff.
Blah,
but in general, with your normal crank set, if you're going with a 157 rear spaced bike, you're going to have to go with a one chainring front end, or you can end up having a slightly compromised chain line situation and run a Boost offset 2x crank, which I wouldn't recommend. I mean, it's something if you're going to end up doing that on your own, that could be fine because it'll compromise your chain line a little bit, but your shifting is not going to be as ideal and a few other things like that.
A Boost offset crankset.
Yeah, remember? Okay, so there's Boost offset chainring spiders.
Oh,
so what that does is that moves your chainrings out 3 millimeters.
Okay.
For a 157, you really want it moved out 7.5 millimeters.
Click.
It's not quite all the way out there.
Okay.
So your chain line is going to be off a little bit.
All right.
It's the type of thing that, you know, if you're doing it on a one-off situation, like as an individual, fine. But you're not going to see a big manufacturer doing that where, you know, somebody walking into a showroom floor of a bike shop is going to end up yanking a bike off the peg and wanting it just to work. They're not going to get into all this number stuff. They're not, you know, big manufacturer is not going to compromise on that. They're going to go with the Boost standard just because it's easy. Everything's going to work. There's widely available stuff. This 157, it's a little more fringe, but it could be a really good option for people.
Probably getting into mountain biking, though, a 1x drivetrain is a little intimidating, though.
For some people, yeah. I mean, depending on where you live, what your fitness level's like, that might be the case. But, you know, like I said, for myself, 1x is plenty. I'm a strong rider. I live in a fairly flat area. And if I know I'm going to someplace that's really hilly, like if I'm going to go ride on the moto trails around here, which have got super, super steep hills, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the 36 chainring that I normally run off, and I'm going to put my winter setup on. I'm going to put a 30-tooth chainring on up front. And I'm going to be able to, you know, like basically winch my way up all those super steep hills and be just fine.
So don't bring your A game. Change your front chainring.
You said it. Yep.
Gotcha.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where being a more advanced rider, it's easy for me to end up looking in that situation and looking at it, anticipating what I'm going to need. And then I just make gear change.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Take the other chain that you used during the winter and put that on and you're good to go.
Yeah. So, you know, depending on what your situation is, that might apply to you. You might want to have your double where you're not changing out chain rings. I mean, both make a lot of sense depending on who you are and what how you ride.
Changing out chain rings isn't that big of a deal.
For some people, yes. Some people, no. All depends. Different strokes for different folks,
yeah,
Andy.
I got you, but geez.
Yeah. So that's the chain line stuff. Hopefully we didn't end up boring you with too many numbers and, you know, chain ring positions and triples, doubles, singles.
Get rid of your front derailleur.
Yeah. Yeah. Burn the front derailleur. Heresy. Yeah.
Yes.
No. So we're going to take another little break, and coming up next, we're going to start to get into what those wider hubs do to the wheel itself. Well, Welcome back, campers. We're on to section number 3 of this podcast, where we start talking about what those wider hubs do to the wheel.
This section's going to need another log on the fire as well.
Yeah, hopefully we won't geek you out too hard with numbers, but I think, you know,
this one's easier to understand, I think.
I think so, too. Chainline's kind of this mythical centerline thing, which I always have a hard time getting my head around, but this one's a little more straightforward. So this is a time to provide some historical perspective, because way back in the day, hopefully it will be. Yes. Way back when mountain bikes sort of first came out, 135 spacing was adopted. And at that point in time, there weren't a whole lot of speeds on the rear end of the bike. I think it was adopted when we ended up going from 6 to 7 speed rear cassettes.
Wow, that was awesome.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you're dealing with rim brakes and a bunch of other stuff.
Yep.
So over time, we've added a whole bunch more speeds. That's made the cassette wider. So that has narrowed, on the drivetrain side, narrowed your hub flange.
Mm-hmm.
On the non-drivetrain side, we've introduced disc brakes. So now all of a sudden, you know, that's kind of eaten into the space that the spokes have for your rear wheel. And then to add on to it, we've also made wheels bigger. So bigger diameter. We've gone from 26 to 27 or 29 inch wheels.
Right.
So there's been a lot of things that have affected the wheel over the years since 135 was originally adopted. And as all these changes have taken place, there's been all sorts of engineers out there, and I don't mean that derogatorily. I grew up in an engineered family, and I've got definite engineered inclinations myself.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, the engineers have really worked hard through improved materials, improved design, to keep wheels stiff and strong. So, you know, through this entire time, we've had a lot of improvements, but the rear wheel, there's just been more and more space taken up by other stuff that's taken away from sort of the fundamental strength of the rear wheel. And when I talk about this fundamental strengthening, this all has to do with geometry of spokes. But before I get into that, what started to happen in the bike industry is we've started to go with, you know, these frames. We're going with tapered steer tubes. We've got through axles. We've got bigger diameter, stiffer handlebars. We're going with tubeless setups on our tires with better tire designs, so you can get more traction. Going with bigger tires, we're doing all these different things where different parts of the bike are getting stiffer, and we're getting more traction. So if we do that, there's sort of a new spot on the bike that gets highlighted as being not stiff enough or not strong enough. And we're kind of getting to the point where wheels are the Achilles, the weak link in the modern bicycle, because all that other stuff has gotten stronger. And then tires, that the wheels are starting to end up really being the weak point that the engineers are seeing and being like, oh man, this is not good. We're seeing a lot more wheel failures. You know, we either have to increase the weight or we have to end up doing something to make these things stronger and stiffer.
Okay.
So, you know, what you're doing right now could be working great. It could be 2-3 years down the road, and see where technology's heading and see how people are riding and make sure that things are designed for the long haul, not where you're at right now, and make sure that, you know, we're taking a long view on this. And what's happened is we've started to end up seeing some companies, like I'm gonna call out Cannondale right now. Cannondale in the 2015 model year ended up bikes, and they identified this issue with rear wheels not being strong enough, and they started going with an asymmetric rear end. They offset the rear end to basically do the same thing as this Boost 157 stuff, to, you know, allow a stronger rear wheel. But they did it a la, you know, Surly and the Pugsley to, you know, rear wheel. And that's not bad. That's just kind of funky.
Yeah, that seems weird.
Yeah, and you know, as most of us fat bikers know, the Pugsley and Moonlander designs, they're great designs. They've been around for a long time. However, it's kind of a weird solution. And for whatever reason, the human brain tends to like symmetry.
When I'm drunk, the Pugsley looks a lot better. Because it kind of straightens out, you know? But yep, it does look really, really weird, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with asymmetric frames. It's just, in general, you know, if you want to avoid that and have a stronger wheel, you got to end up increasing this hub width with all this other stuff going on. So that's kind of the reason why we've started talking about this new hub standard of Boost, and then also talking about the 150-157. So let me explain real briefly why a wider hub is going to make a stronger, stiffer wheel.
Yeah.
And this all has to do with the angles of the spokes.
Jeez.
Yeah. So you know how the spokes kind of angle from into the rim?
Yep.
That angle that's formed there is typically referred to as the bracing angle. And when you think about the term bracing, that's where you're, you know, kind of like fortifying, you're preparing, you're like, you know, it's a term to kind of, you know, reinforce structurally or
push whatever. Against.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what that, excuse me, side stiffness to the wheel. If spokes were going straight up and down, so they were like completely and totally vertical, that wheel would be really strong for any load that's straight up and down.
Okay.
But as soon as you side load the wheel, you go into a corner, you know, you lean the bike over, you know, any kind of steering forces, the wheel would fold over and it would taco with very that angle. You know, the bigger that angle is, so the more the spokes angle from hub to rim, the stronger the wheel is, because structurally it's just got more leverage to handle any forces that are going on at the rim.
Is that possibly why mountain bike pioneers went with a smaller wheel?
That's exactly
rather
it.
Than the 700C that everyone
yep.
was riding.
That's exactly okay. it. Yeah, because the 26 is going to end up being a stronger wheel.
Right.
All things being equal.
Yeah.
So okay. It's the same sort of concept. You know, as our wheels have gotten bigger, we want to end up getting the hubs wider.
Yeah.
So and then you know same thing with you know all these other gears and. Disc brakes and all this other stuff.
Okay.
So, you know, what the engineers, to kind of bring it back to that, the engineers were looking at is, okay, either we got to go with an asymmetric frame, really up the game as far as materials go with carbon rims and these other really expensive things. We can just widen out the hub and you get a lot of bang for your buck by doing that. It's the same thing we ended up seeing with frame designs. Like when you ended up having, you know, like let's say oversized aluminum versus, you know, steel frames. The bigger tubes are stiffer.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where, okay, you went from steel to aluminum. So yeah, we had a material change, but, cause you can make a lighter, stiffer bike. And the same thing goes on with the rear wheel.
Okay.
So, let's talk about how big a difference this actually makes. So if you want to kind of quantify, and this is just purely, and I'm going to get geeky here and show I'm a math major, but if you end up doing the vector calculations on this, and I won't explain
vector
anything.
Vector calculations.
Yes, yes. Oh, force goodness. Vector calculations here.
Awesome. Whatever the hell those are.
And by the way, I guess let me also say, all these numbers are based on Industry 9 hubs, because Industry 9 is pretty much the only company I've seen so far that's accommodating all these standards. So it's very easy for me to end up comparing, let's say, rear wheel.
So I9 is the only hub company?
There's other companies that are making them. It's just, I9 is very consistent in offering a lot of different options.
Okay.
So I just, I pick on them and use their hub dimensions.
That's our standard then.
Yeah. Okay. It was an easy comparator.
Sounds good.
So and there'll be variations from, you know, hub manufacturer to hub manufacturer. But let's compare those rear wheels. Let's look at a Boost, a 148 rear wheel versus a 142 spaced sort of quote unquote normal mountain bike. You're going to end up just automatically based on that geometry have a 12% increase in strength or stiffness to the side loads.
What does that 12% mean? I mean, is that a lot?
It's a fair amount. I mean, if you're looking at how much you would have to spend to get that 12% someplace else, you're talking a couple $100.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you'd have to end up going with like a carbon rim or
right.
something like that. There's earlier, this just happens to end up being a fairly inexpensive way to end up doing that by leveraging geometry.
Okay.
For comparison's sake, if you wanted to compare like a 157 to a 142 wheel, you're talking 35% stiffer. So like when we talked about
a downhill,
yeah, that's why the downhill is
35%
yeah,
stiffer than the boost. Okay.
Yeah, so it's a significantly stiffer, stronger wheel. And, you know, like I said, why would I pick 157 over boost? Well, for me personally, you know, I weigh over 190 pounds. Mm-hmm. I'm a big guy. I ride hard. That 35%, you know, stiffer, stronger wheel, that's a really important figure for me. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I've tweaked so many wheels over the years with the way I ride. So that's something that I would want to leverage. And I'm more than happy to end up giving up chainring options to get that.
Okay.
On the front, if you compare 110 versus 100, and this is a little more theoretical because this is the one hub that i9 hasn't released yet. They're supposed to be releasing it here in a couple weeks. Guessing at what the 110 hub dimensions are going to be, but that would work out to be approximately 23% stiffer.
Okay.
So
the boost front.
Exactly.
Versus traditional, yep. 100. Okay.
So a significantly stiffer front end. For you fat bikers out there that are running summer setups and maybe, you know, you built up a 29 or plus wheel set, if you compare your 170, 177 rear to a traditional mountain bike, that's like 135, 142 spaced, you're seeing an 80% stiffness increase. So,
holy cow.
Yeah, so that's a really, 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 really big stiffness increase.
Does that change when you have a fat bike rim that's 26? Is it even...
Yeah, and of course, like all the dimensions I just ended up giving...
They're all 29?
That pretty much just keeps the rim diameter constant.
Okay. Okay.
That's not getting changed whatsoever at all.
Okay.
So I guess the reason why I bring up the fat bike thing is because if you're running a fat bike and you put a 29 or plus or a, you know, a 27 plus wheel set on there, you're going to have a really, really, really nice stiff wheel set.
Yeah, I guess
you're going to be kind of the envy of all the regular mountain bikers in that respect.
You're going to be riding a stiffy.
Yeah, definitely. And you can... You can make your wheel set lighter, more towards the outside. You can go with a lighter rim. You can go with lighter spokes. You can go with lighter spoke crossings and things like that to accommodate. But that's a whole other topic for another day.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So the bottom line is stiffer wheels handle better.
Mm-hmm.
So you can end up, you know, ripping along better. They're going to be less likely to taco and buckle over. The better handling or whatever, it allows you to end up just going with lighter parts or cheaper parts that are less stiff to basically get to the same spot.
What kind of person would I be that wouldn't want the increased stiffness?
You'd end up being a waify little climber dude where your rim and tire options and all that other kind of stuff, I mean, are already plenty stiff for you. So you just want to go with...
Climber dudes.
Yep. Yeah. See, that I can say that as being, you know, nearing in on 200 pounds. I can describe them that way.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Okay.
So.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Bottom line, wider hub, stronger wheel.
Okay.
Our wheels have been under assault by all the other technologies going on, and they need to be shored up and made a little bit stronger and stiffer. Interested in more geekitude about wheels. In the show notes, we're going to end up providing a link to an online version of the bicycle wheel by Joseph Brandt. He unfortunately recently died. That's a very sad moment, but he wrote best book on wheels. It's a bit dated because this was written many years ago, but amazing job of explaining how wheels work, how to make wheels stronger, how to build wheels properly, and a lot of really sort of basic things about wheel dynamics.
But not in layman's terms.
He brings it down really well. Okay. Yeah, he's got great diagrams. Okay. It's, you know, you got to be inclined towards a bit of geekery to want to read about this subject,
right.
But he does an excellent job of explaining it.
All right, check that out in the show notes then.
So coming up next, we're going to end up getting into drivetrain clearance and tire clearance and some things like that, but we're going to take a little break in the meantime.
All right.
Welcome back, campers. We're on section number 4, where we start talking about tire and drivetrain clearance and get into chain stay length and a few other fun topics. So to kick it off, there's two primary issues that you start running into with 3-inch or bigger tires if you're trying to keep the spacing in the rear at like the 142 and use all your chainrings. You start to have the chain rub on the tire. That's a topic that's real familiar to a lot of fat bikers.
Witnessed that before, yep.
Yeah, where, you know, people are trying to stick a little bit fatter tire on there, and, you know, you might end up, you know, running into your tire rubbing on the chain if the tire gets too fat.
Trying to grind up a hill. And
yep. I mean, that's, and, you know, this is kind of a timeless subject in the fat bike world. It's the reason why people ended up going with 190 spacing and doing some things like that. The other issue that you run into with the 3-inch tires and regular spacing is there's a lot of action going on up there in the crankset area tire. You got clearance issues because of the chain rings, and it's just really tough to fit all that stuff in there and then keep the chain stays fairly short. And we'll get into a little bit more about why you want short chain stays. But the bottom line is that there's just not a lot of real estate to fit all that stuff and then also have enough mud clearance that, you know, if you get in some nasty weather, you're not going to end up having your wheel roll to a stop. Because so where this fatter hub thing comes in, it's like we talked about, when you widen out the rear hub, you also have to widen out the chain rings. And when you widen out the chain rings, you create more real estate up front for bigger tires, or, you know, being able to bring that tire in closer to where the bottom bracket area is. So let me kind of give two quickie examples of established 29 plus bikes that have limited drivetrain options that kind of highlight what I'm talking about. And one of them would end up being the Niner Ross 9. And there's a quote in Bike Rumor that comes right from the Niner product manager, Barrett James. And it says that, you know, chain and derailleur cage clearance with fat 3-inch tires is not ideal, and complete bikes will only get single chainring builds. Surly says a pretty similar thing about their Krampus. This isn't a Niner problem. This is a fundamental design issue having that narrower 135, 142 spacing. And on Surly's website for the Krampus, they recommend a 1x crank, or they end up saying that you can end up using the Surly OD crank and a 2x setup. And what that OD crank does is, you know, a lot of, once again, fat bikers are going to be familiar with this. It basically pushes those chain rings further out. So that's, you know, those are two established great designs that, you know, the manufacturer just straight up says, hey, using this existing 142, 135 spacing stuff in the rear, you're going to take a compromise.
There's some limitations
on the drivetrain. Yep. Exactly. So, the Boost 148, it basically gives you another 3 to 4 millimeters of space up front that you can jam the tire into. And if you look at the 150, 157, I mean, it gives you 7.5 more millimeters of those.
So you get another ring.
Exactly. Okay. So, you know, that gives you a lot more real estate to work with. Now, the reason why this is so important is that there's been a big trend in the bike industry to go with shorter chain stays.
Why do I want shorter chain stays?
We're going to do a show down the line where we talk a lot more about bike geometry, because it's a big topic. But one aspect of that is chain stay length. And when you end up having shorter chain stays, that tucks the rear wheel more in under your weight, under your butt.
Better traction then?
Yeah, that's exactly. You have more weight on the rear wheel.
Okay.
It decreases your wheelbase, which makes the bike feel a little bit snappier. It handles a little bit quicker. A lot of people feel like with a shorter chain stay, it's easier to manual the bike. It just feels more playful. So there's a lot of advantages to shorter chain stays.
And the opposite would be true if I'm a fat biker, then I want a wider.
Yes and no. Let's save that for another time, because once you start getting into geometry, there's a lot going on with that in a lot of different dimensions.
I got a lot of questions about geometry. Then let's get to that next show. Jeez.
Yeah. So in general, though, anyway, shorter chain stays are better to a great extent, just because you get better traction. You get a more playful, flickable bike.
Would the Weak Warrior make notice those differences?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of times when people will end up going with a bike that's, let's say, I don't know, 3/4 inch shorter chain stays. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to end up cleaning climbs that they never were able to ride up previously.
Okay.
So there's some really distinct advantages there for, you know, your average Joe rider.
Cool.
Now, kind of to give some perspective on this, just so that if you ever, you know, are looking at the specs on a new bike, to kind of start historically, back in the day with 26ers, mm-hmm. normally around 16 3/4 inch chainstays was the norm.
Are we measuring from the center of the bottom bracket to the dropout?
Exactly. Yep. Okay. If you end up measuring from like the center of your through axle or quick release to the center of your cranks, that's what your chainstay length is. Thank you for backing up. A good approximation if you just, you know, crack out the tape measure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like I was saying, back in the day, 26er bikes around 16 3/4. Some bikes would end up being shorter. You might even get as short as like 16 3/8 or 16.5 inch. And then, you know, some of them were as long as 17 inches. But that was pretty normal. And then we went with 29ers. And all of a sudden, because of the bigger diameter wheel, that distance had to end up getting bigger. And the means. So, most people felt like there was so much advantage to the bigger wheels that they didn't
sacrifice the flickability.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, that whole, you know, the flickability term. That's one of those things, you know, a lot of times people ragged on 29ers. They're like, this thing feels sluggish.
Yeah.
This, you know,
riding the couch.
Yeah, it's you know, so much more mellow than my, you know, 26er bike. Right. You know, I want to stick with my 26er because I like it for this reason or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of that had to do with chainstay length. So we've seen this big trend now where now that people have kind of gotten over the first transition to the, you know, the 29er-inch wheel, now we're starting to see a lot shorter chainstays. And different manufacturers are doing all sorts of different things. But you can commonly see 16.5, 16 3/4-inch 29er bikes. So that's a big trend right now. But what's also going on is we have this trend where people are going with wider tires. And you can't suck that rear wheel in there and then also increase the tire width and still have decent chainring clearance. So long story short, having a wider hub allows you to end up having shorter chainstays, mm-hmm. which makes your bike more fun, and it allows you to run a wider tire also.
I got enough. Are bike companies making higher end 26-inch wheeled bikes still?
Pretty much no.
Can I get a badass 26-inch wheeled bike?
You would probably have to go custom if you were going to go that route.
Really?
Yeah, or, I mean, you could end up going with a 4-inch tire.
Right.
Yeah,
right. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah, so 26ers, I mean, that's kind of gotten phased out and replaced by the 27, you know, 0.5 thing. But,
okay.
Yeah, you're not going to end up getting into
it. All right. Sorry about that. That came to my mind. I was like, I want to know this.
Yep. Nope. Valid question. So, all right. We're going to end up taking another quick break, and we're going to sum all this up and send you off on your way.
One more log to throw in that fire.
Yep, because we're going to end up bringing this all back together and hopefully summarize what ended up being a lot of technical stuff. So if you've hung in here this long, congratulations. Hopefully what we were saying makes some sense. So
not me. Hopefully what you were saying.
okay, so this boost stuff. Kind of the cut and dry is, you know, the boost spacing, that 148 spacing, that is the bare minimum that you want to end up going with if you're going to end up running a plus-sized drivetrain, especially if you want to end up having a 2x crank set option.
Right.
There's other benefits as far as wheel strength and all this other stuff, but if you're going to go with a plus bike, you got to have at least 148 spacing if you want to have drivetrain options. 150, 157, that's a very, very viable alternative. It's boostier. All the benefits are, you know, bigger, but you start to run into some negatives because you have more constraints on your drivetrain options.
Yep.
Really, the easiest for most people is going to end up only being a 1x setup. You're not going to be able to end up running a double setup unless you do some of that. I hate to bring up a new topic in the summary, but for some riders, if you ride in a very heels in position, having that wide rear end, you might run into some heel clearance issues because the 150, 157 is slightly wider. So just to toss that out there.
Okay.
So that's another potential negative, and it doesn't apply to everybody. Over benefits. And really the gist of this plus stuff is that why wouldn't you want the option to run a 3-inch tire, a 2-inch tire, you know, a 2.5-inch tire on your new bike?
Right.
It gives you a lot more flexibility and just provides more options for you. So with this boost stuff, yeah, it's transitioning into some new things. Yeah, you're going to run into some compatibility stuff, but it opens up a lot of worlds and offers a lot of new options that were never available before that you can choose to take advantage of. You can choose not to take advantage of. There's very little negatives that goes along with all these positives that you
if you're in camp number one, it might take you a little bit longer, but you know,
exactly.
I options are good.
Yes.
Jeez.
And this is a fat bike podcast. If you already have a fat bike that you think rides awesome, you have a ball on that thing, but you're fat, you know, or excuse me, if you're plus curious, it's really easy.
Go back to show number one.
Yeah. Go back to show number one. You know, look at your options on, you know, running a 27 plus or a 29 plus setup, and you don't really have to worry about any of this boost stuff. You already got a kick butt setup.
You're already boosted.
Yeah, exactly. You're boosted squared. Yeah, it's like, you know, the 170 or 190 spacing that you've got is a great setup for day-to-day riding if it's working for you right now.
Right.
I guess the only thing really to kind of just to emphasize, and we talked a lot about on this in the first podcast, is that if your bike was only designed, typically that means it's a 170 spaced rear wheel,
mm-hmm.
You're most likely going to be looking at the 27 plus setup in order to maintain your geometry of the bike.
We talked about that first show.
Yep. And if your bike is designed for the bigger, you know, the 4.8 inch, 5 inch tire, then you're going to be looking at a 29 plus setup to maintain the geometry of your bike.
Gotcha.
Well, thank you, Andy. I think that wraps it all up.
Yeah, I've got my head wrapped around some of this stuff. I might have to listen to this one a couple times to get it down and look at a bike while I'm doing it. But yeah, hubs. A whole show on hubs. That's good.
Yeah, hope you're dry. So, had a lot of fun talking with you about this. And
indeed.
We'll see you around the campfire soon.
All right.
Cheers. Thanks for listening. The music we are using on today's show is the Freak Fandango Orchestra and their song Requiem for a Fish. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com/fatcamp, including show notes for today's show.